Welcome to This Is Money podcast in partnership with NS&I, bringing you a weekly roundup of the top personal finance, consumer and business stories that editor Simon Lambert and his team have been covering on their award-winning website. I'm your host Georgie Frost, and with me today is personal finance editor Rachel Rickard-Strauss and consumer affairs editor Lee Boyce. And coming up, pay up or lose out. That's the reality facing under 50s who hope the state pension will still be around when they retire. Meanwhile, there are calls for health warnings on state pension forecasts after one This Is Money reader got something of a shock. We find out how much did our Yuletide taste test impact on the festive results of the big supermarkets. I doubt any, but we bring you the winners and losers all the same. We give a toss about an expensive coin, and Rachel tells us to enjoy those Costa lattes and Pret lunches. She has a better plan for our New Year financial resolutions. All that and plenty more coming up. Don't forget you can stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app.
This Is Money, brought to you in partnership with NS&I, giving you 100% security for your savings, backed by HM Treasury.
Now, the state of the state pension has been very much in the news this week, making rather grim reading for those under 50, which is everyone in this studio. Now, you may have to cough up more in national insurance contributions or say goodbye to the state pension by 2035. That's the prediction of the government's actuary department. Now, it comes as there are warnings over the accuracy of state pension forecasts after one This Is Money reader discovered his latest statement was wrong. But firstly, the rather grim, if not wholly unsurprising news first, that with an ageing population, we may struggle a bit in the future to fund our retirements.
Yeah, Georgia, this is a frightening scenario for anyone under 50. This is really grim reading from the government's actuary department that says a tax rise is needed, basically, to fund the state pension fund, because it's going to run out by 2035. And that means you're not going to be able to really rely on state pension. And it is something that has been talked about for a very long time. And that is why there has been a big drive towards savings towards private pensions. And that's why there's been a lot of noise about people being told to take care of their own retirement and to plan for their own retirement and think about maxing out their pension, you know, from their company and whatnot. But this is actually massively worrying statistics. And it's one of those subjects that I worry that a lot of people are just kind of not really thinking too much about, or, you know, worry about that closer to the time. You know, I'm in my 30s, I'm in my 40s or in my 20s, and I'm just working and I'm not really thinking too far ahead about state pension and my private pension and how it's all going to play out. Basically, we pay our national insurance contributions, then fund the state pension. And at the moment, 90% of what we pay into NI goes to fund state pensions. That's already quite high. And it's going to get probably higher. We've got an ageing population. People are getting older. We're already having retirement ages being pushed back because of the strain that this is on. And quite worryingly from the Treasury, there was a quote that they said, "In the long run, life expectancy and demographic trends will continue to pose a challenge for the public finances." It's quite ominous, that, isn't it? It's like, there's no real definitive answer of what's going to happen. And of course, if you start tinkering with the tax that we pay, it's not good for whoever's in charge at that moment of time. So if Theresa May goes, well, you know, we're going to have to start raising what you pay into national insurance, it's not going to look too good when there's a general election, you know, next time coming around. You're the person that's had to tinker with that and make that hard decision to basically make state pension work. And let's also face it, we've got one of the worst state pensions in Europe as it is anyway. So, you know, the payment's not exactly earth-shattering for people. And we've had a lot of noise in the last year about the housing crisis, et cetera, et cetera. I think this is something that is going to really, really start picking up pace with the worry over this year.
Rachel, what's the reality of this going to look like? Are we talking about paying more in national insurance contributions? Are we going to get the self-employed? Are they going to have to pay up a little bit more?
Well, the problem is, it is essentially a Ponzi scheme, the state pension. So it's not that the money that we're all paying in now into the pot is going to be sitting there waiting for us, compounding and doing what other pensions do, waiting for the moment that we hit state retirement age and then we can claim it. No, what we're paying in now is being paid out to today's pensioners. And this just about works, okay, because there are enough of us working that we can fund it. But as soon as that balance starts to move in the way that it currently is, so there are fewer workers, more people retired, that's going to be a problem. So there are lots of different solutions to this, none of which are palatable. One, we increase the state pension age.
Which we're already seeing, as Lee pointed out.
Exactly, it's happening now and plenty more to come, I'm sure. Or we lower the amount that everyone gets.
Can we target it more to those people that need it the most?
Or that's another thing, is we make it means tested. But I mean, I think that would face a lot of resistance because people feel like there should be some kind of universality since we're all paying in. We should all at least get a bit of it out. So they are some of the options. And then the fourth one, I think, is perhaps what I think will be certainly in the sort of shorter medium term more likely, is that none of that is palatable at all. Politically, very awkward to start to talk about. And so I think there will be more kind of sneaky stuff. There's often talk around elections about treating us like grown-ups and coming clean and saying, look, this is the situation. This is how much money we've got. It's got to cover X, Y, and Z. It's unsustainable. We're going to have to up your taxes or cut back somewhere else or whatever. But we saw what happened when the Conservative Party decided to have the grown-up conversation about social care and say, look, we cannot pay for everyone to go into care homes and maybe people should use the value of their property to contribute as well. Didn't go down very well for the Conservative Party. So I'm not sure whether parties in future will have been stung by that and be ready to have those sorts of grown-up conversations. So instead, we see the sneaky stuff happening. We see things, you know, I've been talking a lot about bereavement payments being cut back because that also comes to the National Insurance Pot. We've seen this attempted attack on the self-employed to get more National Insurance contributions out of the self-employed. And so maybe that's how it will be done, is a bit shaved off here, a bit shaved off there, often in the places where people are most likely, at least likely, to resist. So it's difficult to go after people's pensions because that's big headline stuff. But if you can go after things that are a bit more obscure, a bit more boring sounding, or that affect groups that have less of a voice, then I think that that's something that will be a trend as well.
Is the reality, Lee, because given the fact that the state pension will give you around about £8,000 a year, that actually, I don't know about other people, but I certainly just think this is all on me. I put what I want to into my personal pension, and if I get a state pension, bonus. Mm-hmm. But that's the way I'm looking at it now.
I don't think that's a necessarily bad way to be looking at things, Georgie, to be honest with you, because how this is all going to play out is anyone's guess. And it's a difficult decision that the DWP and all the Treasury, and they need to get together and be finding solutions to this problem. Is this happening behind the scenes? Well, I don't know, because there's a million and one things going on and on the government agenda at the moment. But, you know, it's going to be a national scandal if the time comes that people start retiring and they're not going to get the state pension that they thought they and expected they were going to get after years and years and decades of paying national insurance. And people are going to ask, well, where's that money gone? Where's my national insurance contributions gone? Why have my parents and grandparents been able to, in the past, retire and have state pension? Why have I had to additionally fork out money for a private pension as well as national insurance, only to find that I'm worse off than other generations? And that's the reality that people are going to have to face up to in the coming decades. And it's a very awkward, horrible thing to have to think about and deal with at a time when you're in your 30s and 40s, when you're not necessarily really got one eye on retirement in the future. But that is why we at This Is Money have for a number of years now, I've emphasised how important having a private pension is, how compounding works, and how to make sure that you're going to have a retirement that you want. I would urgently tell people to have a review. If there's one thing you do in 2018, it's take a look at your private pension. And it's never too late to start putting more into it, or even starting from scratch and not thinking too much about it. Let's face it, the state pension is £8,000 a year anyway.
But there's a lot of choices for people to make. We're all here, we've said under 50. Do you put money into saving for a house, into your pension? You've got bills which are going up. It is a hard choice to make for people.
It's a massively difficult choice. The way I see your pension is, you know, you can only save into what you can afford to put into it, and hopefully you've got your with an employer that's got, you know, at least matched contributions or perhaps puts in more. It's free money at the end of the day, and even though you're not seeing that at the moment, in the future, you will thank you for ever being able to, you know, sacrifice an extra whatever you can put into your pension month. But you're right. I mean,
and also, while we get tax relief at the moment, it may not last forever.
Exactly. So this is it. And actually, when you put all of these things into the pot, it's actually a really, really difficult, complicated thing to sit down to someone that's probably, you know, fresh out of university or fresh out of school or, you know, newly into work, starting their careers, and saying, right, do you know what? We need to sit down and have a couple hour chat about your pension. This is how it's all going to work. Because people just go, boy, but I'm living for the here and now, which is, you know, I totally understand that point of view, because they'll go, well, you know, got state pension, hopefully I will own a house. And lots of people now, they obviously own their houses outright and they've got a lot of wealth that's not actual, you know, it's bricks and mortars, it's tied up in their house, right? So it's very difficult to downsize, but a lot of people try to do that to then use the equity that they built up and live off some of that. But as we're going to talk about later, you know, pensioners are struggling as well. They're putting more money on things on credit cards. They're obviously also still struggling as well. And that's now. So imagine what it's going to be like when the provisions for a state pension start to run dry and look a little bit bleak. I'm telling you, in the next 5 to 10 years, this is going to be so massive that the government, whoever's in charge, whoever's battling to get in charge, this is going to have to be one of the key messages of what happens to this in the future.
I wonder, Lee, taking on board what you just said there, with plans to extend auto-enrolment to those who are 18, actually that conversation will already be being had. You know, we've got personal finance in schools at the moment. These conversations are being had at the moment with younger people that they weren't when I was younger. No. So I wonder if it's this sort of middle generation at the ones that are really going to struggle, Rachel.
I think certainly auto-enrolment is the game changer. We'll see this year actually how it all plays out, because at the moment the idea is that you don't have to make that decision every month, do I pay into my pension or do I spend it on pressing things that I really have to cover this month or this year. It's just taken out of your pay packet and you never see it, and hopefully that's okay. Most people have been all right for that. The opt-out rate is very low, but this is the year when it really starts to go up, and we'll see whether people stomach it or they say actually either they want to go back to the contributions. I don't know that you can go back to the contributions that you were on before. So whether people choose to opt out altogether. I think it's really good news that it will hopefully be extended to 18-year-olds and also people who earn under the cut-off point of £10,000, because the earlier you start, of course, as Lee says, it compounds, and then that's brilliant. But I think you could be right that it will take a kind of, it sounds very grim, but a lost generation or possibly two, because everyone looks at their parents, their grandparents, and think it's not a bad situation. Lots of people who are retired now are on their final salary pension schemes, absolutely gorgeous, golden plated, wonderful things. And they've got their state pension, and pensioner poverty rates have really declined over the last couple of decades. So people look to their grandparents and think, that's what it will be like for me and it will be all right. And there's just such a gap between that generation and probably ours. So then will it take a couple of generations to really struggle for the next lot to look at their parents as they start to retire and their grandparents and think, help, I don't want that to happen to me. And so I need to start preparing now.
Which is all of us in here. As Lee did point out, you're doing some research this week, weren't you, into those who are struggling in retirement. We're talking about equity release with spiralling debts, unsecured debts. Tell us a little bit more about that.
So equity release figures out this week, they've gone up by about 40% in a year.
Equity release, just remind us.
So this is when you tap your homes for cash, basically. Without having to sell it, you can get money extracted from your homes, like a loan that you never have to pay off in your lifetime. It's paid off when your home is sold, normally when you've passed away.
Which sounds great,
It does sound really good, doesn't it? Except compounding it, while it's your best friend if you're saving, if it's on loans, it's your worst friend, because the debt compounds on the debt on the debt. And very quickly, you can end up with, well, nothing, actually. I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. If you don't have people whom you'd want to hand money to when you pass away, then spending what you have, being able to access it, is no bad thing. But it can, it can be pretty expensive. So the figures showed something that I picked out that I thought was pretty alarming. A third of people who are taking out equity release do so to pay off unsecured debts, so personal loans, credit card debts, and of those with credit card debts, the average balance outstanding is about £11,000. And that means that for some people, just servicing these debts is eating up about 30% of their income. That's a really difficult predicament to live in, I think, month after month. So people are taking out these plans to wipe the debt so that they can sort of start from scratch. But interestingly, it's not that they retire in debt. Mm. Often it's people who have been prudent their whole lives, worked really hard, but then they retire, they don't have much of a buffer, and then something goes wrong. So their car breaks down and it needs work, or their boiler breaks down. And maybe that happens, and maybe it happens, something else happens a few months later. And so they do what the only thing that they really feel that they can do, they put it on a credit card, can't pay it off, and then it escalates and it escalates. Step Change has done a lot of work into the importance of that buffer and found that if people had a buffer of just £1,000, that would be enough to keep lots of people out of problem debt, which then spirals. So it is pretty worrying that the people that we've just been talking about, the lucky ones, yeah, who have retired with homes that they've been able to buy outright, that they've perhaps benefited from the house price growth that we've seen over the last couple of decades, who do have their state pension and often have a gold-plated pension as well, are still struggling.
But I mean, it's very easy to sort of make a generational divide here, but I think lots of people are struggling, and it's perhaps a little bit glib just to divide it up like that. Certainly the next generation coming through, our generation, will struggle in different ways, but there are people that you can point to, as you said here, who are struggling. What I don't like, the debates around debt and spending over Christmas, because I think that gets into people's minds. The people who get into debt do so because they are willy-nilly with their spending. And actually, the reality shows, people like Step Change show, that the majority of people who get into debt do so as a result of a life-changing event, be that a breakup, be that ill health, which will get worse as you get older. And actually, the FCA pointed out, didn't they? The Financial Conduct Authority pointed out only a few months ago that actually 50% of the population are financially vulnerable to something like this happening, and they don't have that buffer. So it goes to point out, Lee, that we really do need to have some sort of security, mm-hmm, as well as saving for pensions and for house. But yes, it's so true.
And actually, this is the sort of thing that should be taught when you are at school, you know, when you are in your last phase of secondary school and going into sixth form. These are the sorts of chats that I wish that I had, where you're told, do you know what, you do need to save. You need to have a rainy day fund where a life-changing event may happen, and it's good just to have a separate pot of cash. And I know it's very difficult because, you know, we're in a time where, you know, wages have been pretty stagnant and the cost of living is going up, as you rightly point out. But actually, if we can start having that conversation with our children, you know, and at that age, from a really early age, how important it is to try and not put things on a credit card. All right, savings rates are so low at the moment, and we've been repeating this for years. Okay, you might not be earning buckets of interest on this cash, this little rainy day fund you've got, but it could massively help out. It is amazingly important to have that little rainy day fund. And this is the sort of thing, honestly, I think if I was told that at that age, it may seem so simplistic to us, but I think a lot of people get into adulthood and they haven't really had any important chats about finance or personal finances. And I know there has been a bit of a drive to do this over the last few years, but whether or not this is really happening too much, I don't know. But it's frightening times, I think, Georgie, that we live in. Look at the amount of credit card debt and personal loans and things are out there, yeah, that are unpaid. All it's going to take is another little financial crisis or something, a little blip or something to happen. We're on the verge of another sort of credit meltdown, and it's worrying.
Well, we did get some figures out from Visa about, mm-hmm, consumer spending down for the first time in 5 years. So, mm-hmm, I wonder if that message is getting through, she says rather optimistically. But we'll get onto that in a moment when we talk about supermarkets. There is one final thing I want to talk about when it comes to pensions. And this is the case of David Debill. Now, I hope I've got his name pronounced rightly there. And State Pension Forecast. Rachel, take up the mantle if you would.
Well, the good news is you can get a state pension forecast. It's a convoluted process involving different codes that you have to get and whatever. But you can log on. It's a gov.uk site and find out how much you are likely to get. And it does caveat it. I screenshot mine so that I could present it to whichever chancellor when I retire who says, sorry, we changed our mind, there's no state pension left. Proof that that's what I was promised if I paid in the amount that I hoped to. So you can get a state pension forecast. The problem is there is a chance that it's wrong. And they're not very upfront about that. They are supposed to be getting the books in order by, I think, 31st of October this year. That may or may not happen. And in the interim, if you look at your state pension forecast, take it with a pinch of salt. There are little caveats on the site, but you have to, I mean, they are a little bit in the terms and conditions. I think, and as we've pointed out this week, and Tanya's pointed out, Steve Webb as well, our pensions agony uncle, a health warning would be really useful just to say, this might be wrong. Because the problem is that people make decisions based on how much money they think they're going to have. That's what you're supposed to do. It's called planning. It's great. If it's wrong, that is a problem. One, because you might have less money than you thought. And two, because HMRC allows you to do, there are a bunch of different things that you can do to top up your state pension. It's complicated, but you can. And people might be tempted, as this couple were, to look into those sorts of options based on an incorrect state pension forecast. That is a problem. Hopefully, in a couple of years, it will be fixed. The state pension one will. And also, there is work towards a pensions dashboard, so we should be able to see all of our pensions in one place, and that should make it a lot easier to plan, but also to see, often I think quite starkly, what the shortfall is between what we have and what we would quite like to have, and perhaps that would help us to plan ahead.
I'm wondering, Lee, if the one sort of white knight in shining armour could be the kind of gamification that we may see. You're laughing at me here, but you know all these apps that you can get, and open banking is going to make that a lot easier for people, because in the past it would be the letters come through the door and you just didn't have to open them, you'd file them in the drawer to never be seen again. But actually now, if you've got them in front of you, you cannot deny this unless you turn your phone off, which, let's be honest, no one does.
It's, I laugh because when you said white, it's a white knight, I thought you meant Sir Steve Webb coming
either way, yes, like, yeah. Steve is too.
I had a really great image in my head of him sort of like coming through with like a lance with like the pension, like, you know, forecast on the end. No, you are right though, and actually lots of people do get their state pension forecast, you know, still in a paper format, but people do, you can get them online. And you're right, I mean, we've been covering this for a little while now. Our pension reporter Tanya Jeffries has done a great job looking at what is actually quite a big scandal here, because people are putting in extra cash, you know, to top up, believing that they're going to get extra payments. And then these state pension forecasts aren't actually entirely accurate, which is not a great thing when you're coming to retire and looking, you know, to what you're going to be doing and juggling your money around and everything. And when people have overpaid and done this, HMRC are making it very difficult for people to get the money back, which is actually scandalous. And we have done various stories about that in the past. But to go back to your original point, there are points of saying, yes, okay, the gamification of this, et cetera, will make a difference. But I still think that a lot of people do like to have a paper-based format of it and having a look and actually a bit of pen and paper and going old school when they go into the finances. And I don't know. I'm not sure how much of an effect that would have, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's something that, you know, the DWP and the taxman are looking at in the future to make it easier and to make it almost a little bit more visually stimulating, shall we say, to have a look at what, you know, the options are for you.
Just the images. Tax doesn't need to be taxing. It can be visually stimulating instead.
This is Money, brought to you in partnership with NS&I Premium Bonds, giving you the chance every month to win up to £1 million tax-free.
Now, it's that time of year when we like to think our Christmas taste test had even the smallest impact on the festive figures coming out from the supermarkets about how they did over the crucial festive period. It doesn't. But we've got some rather interesting numbers. At a time when, as I mentioned earlier, Visa reported consumer spending is down for the first time in 5 years, so pressure really on for the whole retail sector. But how did the supermarkets do? Well, not too badly. My personal winner in the taste test, Sainsbury's, they upped their annual profit
forecast. It was better than expected from Morrison's, Asda up. Tesco, the UK's biggest supermarket chain, announced it had its biggest ever sales week in the run-up to Christmas. They were the winners overall, but investors weren't too crazy about that. Our loser, Waitrose, even they enjoyed growth of 1.5% on a like-for-like basis. Lidl, our winner in the taste test, well, they stormed it, but there are some caveats about established stores and all that jazz. But bad news for M&S. Firstly, Rachel, why is this period quite so important, and not just for supermarkets, for retail generally?
It's the time of year that we all are happy to splash out. And also we're happy to splash out often at full price, which is pretty rare these days. I mean, honestly, when was the last time you bought something that wasn't in a sale? I know that I rarely do, except if there's something specific that I want to buy for someone on deadline, tends to be Christmas, then I'll consider it. And I think lots of people are the same. So they really bank on this time of year to pull in the big profits.
Also, it's been a really sort of difficult time, hasn't it? There's predictions that some big guns may fall, as it were, on the high street, Lee.
I definitely think that there are some rumblings of that happening. I think we had quite an alarming report from the House of Fraser that looks like it's not doing so good. And actually, some of these department store type places, I think, are struggling, like Debenhams, for example. I'm not sure if it's given a big enough niche for people. I don't know what's necessarily driving people to places like House of Fraser and to Debenhams. And especially at a time when the pressure is on online, you know, online spending is continuing to grow. Even in that Visa report, it's saying that online sales are still going up while high street sales are going down. It's very costly to have a premises on the high street with business rates and to have the property. And do you know what? I think a lot of retailers, this is my personal opinion, have shot themselves massively in the foot with Black Friday. And I said this a number of years ago, that basically some shops just make Black Friday now, or even did a few years ago, have made Black Friday. There's one time of year that I will just certainly go into that shop because I know everything's going to be half price on that one day. So when else am I going to go? I'm not going to go in any other day of the year when I know at least one day of the year everything's going to be half price. Yeah. So why would I go in there any other time?
But it's not Black Friday. It's Black the whole of that period.
Well, it is, exactly.
And
yeah,
all
yeah,
these
but
surveys
to
by Which showing that actually you can get better deals other
this
times.
Is it. And
you feel duped.
You feel a bit duped. And I think people are just getting fed up with all of these sort of retailers' tricks. And, you know, people are just wising up to it all as well. I genuinely think this year there's going to be some casualties on the high street. And unless you adapt and unless you're providing a good online model as well, you're going to struggle. And, you know, there's been some really surprising ones as well. Like, I was quite surprised that Poundland's been sort of in the news as struggling a little bit. And there's a bit of things going on behind the scenes. Mm. So it's not even like your higher end sort of like your House of Fraser. Even things like Poundland look like they're struggling a bit. Have they bitten off more than they could chew by opening too many stores and that sort of thing? But it's definitely a tough time to be in retail. And actually, I know you spoke about M&S there. M&S has had a bit of a rotten quarter, actually. Share price went down 7% yesterday, so investors not too happy with what's happening at M&S. And I've walked through M&S. To me, and again, this is my opinion, it feels like it's gone a little bit downhill this year.
Yeah,
I think so.
Which is interesting because the sales were down and generally we've seen them struggle in particularly clothing. They just can't seem to find their niche, but also they're doing it in food.
Well, the food sales has been the one real shining beacon for them for the last couple of years. Their food sales went down over Christmas period. That's a worrying sign. And I'll tell you, there's a number of factors for me. I'll tell you one thing that's massively happened this year. Aldi and Lidl have eaten into the traditional M&S food shopper. So I reckon there's a lot of people out there go, well, it's Christmas, I wouldn't usually get my food shopping in at M&S, but I will certainly buy some premium things from M&S because it's Christmas and because I'm going to splash the cash a bit. You should have seen in Aldi, they had a glossy black like magazine for Christmas. It was embossed. It was really quite, you know, something. And I was looking for it. It could have been M&S. It was unbelievable the way it had been shot and it just how high quality this brochure was of all these premium products. And I'm going, well, look at the price of that compared to M&S. And I think a lot of people done that this year. And that's another reason why it's struggling. And it's actually gambled quite a lot. There's been food stores opening up around the country, not just standalone food stores, but I've noticed them massively going after petrol market. So petrol stations, there seems to be an M&S attached being built. And all of these sort of, they're so expensive. It's like the most expensive place you can ever shop.
I'm wondering if that's affecting people's mindset about M&S now.
And
I'll
tell you
one
last thing about M&S. Like, my girlfriend does like to shop in there. Family have always liked to shop in there, especially food shopping there. But she's actually had enough of it because one thing that always happens in there, like they do a lot of like £3 for £7 deals and that sort of thing. They never ring up at the till. So she'll like do it and then pay and then realise that the discounts haven't been taken off. So she has to go around the supermarket, around M&S, taking photos of all the, and going, look, you've actually overcharged me. Things like that just play on people's minds.
Yeah, it is. Well, it's the little things that make a difference when you're being charged that extra amount. So is the overarching theme then for the supermarkets the fact that, you know, in the past you did get those meal deals, didn't you? The lovely meal deals at Marks and Spencer's. You can get that elsewhere. So the premium products, you're getting better ranges at other supermarkets like Tesco, like Aldi, like Lidl. But then there's also that big fight for the everyday basics as well.
Yeah, but I mean, they all kind of did all right on that this year. I was really surprised that all the figures that have come out, I know that share prices have gone down because people thought that it would be better. But I've been sort of waiting to see who's the big loser because we keep, every day, results are out. No, it's not Morrison's. Morrison's done all right. Not Sainsbury's. Sainsbury's kind of done all right. They've all fared pretty well in a very difficult market. So one reason could be food inflation is just up. I asked Simon this the other day, who's the loser here? Yeah. And he pointed out that, well, if food inflation is about 3%, when we look at sales figures from supermarkets, they don't talk about how much stuff they've sold. They talk about how much money was spent on it. And so people aren't necessarily buying more Christmas food.
So the loser is the consumer.
Food. They're just paying more money. Mm. Yeah. So it's not necessarily that everyone is splashing out and going mad. But they are just about staying in the game, aren't they? I mean, we have these moments. Morrison's was last year and we thought, oh dear, poor old Morrison's, not sure how that's going to play out.
I remember Lee, years ago saying that could be the one that falls. But I mean, you were not alone. Lots of people did think that.
Fair play to it. It's turned the business around by doing a number of things well. And that's a good model for any struggling business, to actually go from, you know, the bottom up and having a look actually what is the fundamental problem with your business. And that's what I think Morrison's have done.
And I mean, shows what I know, because I think exactly the same thing about Marks and Spencer. Last year, I think it was decided it would restrain itself and only have something like 9 sales events a year. I mean, it was ridiculous at Marks and Spencer. You would never pay anything full price. And what they've done is focused on reasonably priced everyday basics so that you might consider buying that T-shirt now and not waiting for the sale. One, because it only costs 20 quid, and two, because you don't know when the next sale will be and if it will be in it. They didn't do Black Friday. We work right next to Marks and Spencer, so I see it. They went up to 60% off, I think, last week. But they would have gone in much sooner with a proper discounting a year ago, a year before that. So I think they're on track in that sense. But it still doesn't seem to be paying off. I don't know if that's because it's a sort of long-term thing that has to bed in, or just because people don't like the products and you can be as crafty as you like with how you display them and how you price them. But if people don't want to buy them, well, then what's the point?
Indeed. I'm wondering your thoughts about going to the rest of this year. So when we sat here this time next year, are we going to be saying something quite similar? You know, with food prices going up, the supermarkets have, by and large, been quite good in shielding us from that rising food cost. We are seeing it, like you said, over the last couple of months. But I'm wondering, you know, will the overarching theme be food prices going up? Will the budget supermarkets, because we're seeing them go everywhere, aren't they? How can they continue these really low prices that's still going to bring people in? Because we've got Tesco and the like that are almost matching them to a certain degree in some departments.
Well, I'd actually say that certainly looking around Aldi and Lidl, I'm noticing some prices creeping up in certain products. And I think what's happened is people have kind of turned to them anyway, and actually the quality of the products is pretty good. I mean, we've touched
on our taste test.
Yeah, and we've touched on this before, but they both use a lot of suppliers that supply upmarket brands like Waitrose. So people have kind of cottoned onto that. And I think now when they're getting a bit more of a loyal shopper, they can start nudging up prices
a little bit.
They're going
to go the way of everyone else, is what I'm thinking.
I'm still not convinced by that. And also they've got the benefit, Aldi and Lidl, of being able to sort of build new stores in a certain way. Because they're not as big as like Tesco and Asda in the amount of sites they've got, they can kind of target where they want to put stores. You know, that would have happened with the other stores, of course, anyway. But they do much smaller little stores. They're a much more sort of nimble business in the fact that they don't offer 100 different ketchups, for example. They just offer like one ketchup. So the size of the supermarkets are a lot more consumer friendly for people that seem to have less time. You know, so you can go and do a shop in an hour.
I'm raising my eyebrow here because, okay, I went in at Christmas for the taste test. Mm. There is nothing consumer friendly about. It's a scrumly.
Yeah, but it's going to be a scrum before Christmas, no matter where you go. Would you like some figures? Would you like some figures for Christmas? What happened? So when we come and did our Christmas taste test, I said it was going to be the busiest shopping weekend, the 22nd and 23rd of December.
I didn't go then.
But the 22nd of December, £747 million spent on that single day in the supermarkets, making it the busiest supermarket shopping day on record.
Wow.
So it happened. We said it might. Shoppers are trading up. So this is all Kantar World Panel. £469 million was spent on premium own label goods in December. So that's driving a lot of what's good about supermarkets at the moment and how they're doing well. Supermarket sales for the 3 months to the end of the year were up 3.8% in value, but grocery prices rose 3.7% in the same time. So basically that till spend, it's just been factored in from the inflation that's adding to it. So I think, George, going back to your little Christmas, I think anywhere you would have gone, it was like that. It's just like if you go to Tesco and do it, it's just on a much grander scale because it's massive.
You do go outside of Christmas, I'd like to point out, and it is still not a pleasant experience. The only pleasant thing about it is the till receipt at the end.
Shopping is never a pleasant experience.
That might be something to do with it. Right, well, maybe for your new year, new you and all that jazz, you did decide that you would go to budget supermarkets, perhaps shave a little bit off your supermarket spend. Perhaps you want to eat less, move more, drink less, save more. How are those New Year's resolutions going, by the way, everybody? But a big one is to get to grips with your finances. But it is more than just, I suppose, where you go for your supermarkets, also giving up those shop-bought lattes and lunches. So Rachel has been drawing up a list of ways to save you big, and you can kind of give them up by February, to a certain extent.
Well, I'm not going to scoff at giving up lattes. That's great if you can do it. But every time you give up a latte, that's a good wedge of self-will that you have to battle with.
The way you said that, every time you give up a latte, I just wanted to say, an angel gets its wings or something like that. Sorry, carry on, Rachel. I got distracted.
So do it. Great. But I just thought that you could, if you have made a New Year's resolution to save money in 2018, you could, if you wanted, probably do it in an afternoon. And if you haven't done these sorts of things for a while, you could probably save hundreds, possibly thousands in an afternoon. And that's quite a good little boost towards your New Year's resolution. And then give up as many lattes as you like. But I don't know, you'd have to have been drinking a lot of lattes to make the same kind of savings giving them up as you would just by remortgaging if you haven't for a while. I mean, there was a study that said that if you haven't for a while, you could save about £4,000 a year. That seems a lot to me.
I'm
not sure if it's £4,000, but even if it's half that, even if it's a quarter of that, that's pretty good. So there's that one, and then there's all the other big hitters like switching your broadband, moving your debt somewhere where you're not being charged quite so much interest, going through your... If you go through your bank statements and just check what's going out that needn't be, and if you can't be bothered, then just look on, if you've got online banking, just look at your direct debits, which, and that takes about a minute, and see if there's anything that you're still paying out for, subscriptions and things that you're not using. And then on the lattes and the lunches, gosh, I'm really not qualified to talk about this because I'm dreadful at behaviour change. But what my philosophy on all of this is, you have to work with your own weaknesses and foibles and make it as easy as possible. It can't just be about willpower, because that's really hard and quite boring. So work out why it is that you are overspending on the things that you want to cut back on, and see if you can find some kind of substitute. So in the case of those blooming lattes, if you do need a caffeine hit in the morning, just make sure that you find a way of making a cup of coffee at home. Or if it's actually that it gets to about 3 p.m. and you've been sitting at your desk for goodness knows how long and you just need an excuse to get away and you don't smoke, maybe find something else that you could do. Could you walk around the block a couple of times or the park? Or if your motivation is just getting away from your desk, or if you're spending pots of money going out for dinner all the time, is it because you like going out for dinner, or is it just because you quite like catching up with friends and that's how you've got into the habit of doing it? I do that a lot, and every now and again I just think maybe we could go for a walk instead. The problem is, as I point out, sometimes you go for a walk and you just build up the most incredible appetite and then go out for a giant
and
expensive
roast.
And
you want to have coffee with you as
well. So maybe you have to bring a sandwich on your walk and then go and have a cup of tea. But just trying to give stuff up, if you can do it, that's brilliant. I'm rubbish at it. Yeah. So I really do try to think, if I'm going to try and give something up, how can I work with my own weaknesses?
I'm hoping, you know, things like Pret are saying you can get 50p off if you bring your own cup into the store. I've tried that. I can't tell you how many shop-bought thermos flask-type efforts that I've got racked up. So I'm hoping I'm going to get to the sort of plastic bag stage where I'm going to go in, use the cup. I'm obviously going to start forgetting to use that cup, but then hopefully it'll be ingrained in my brain that I can't possibly pay full price anymore, so I'll just walk out if I don't have my cup. Do you reckon that will work?
No.
All right. Any tips? Do send a postcard to This Is Money. Right, Lee, before we go, it's been a while since we've had a good coin story.
Oh, yes.
I'm going to take a run up to this again. Numismatists. Numismatists, don't worry. Don't worry. Lee has not forgotten you. Lee, what do you have for us?
Can I firstly say thank you, all listeners, readers, for your frequent emails about coins that I receive on a weekly basis. Oh, I would say I get three figures, probably at least 100 emails a week about coins that have turned over to change. I love it. I love seeing your pictures of coins and what might be there. So please do feel free to keep sending them to me. Now, we've got a hot story for 2018 coin related. I really like this story, actually. I think it's a really good one. So last year, the Royal Mint launched an Isaac Newton 50p coin. There was 1.8 million that were minted and are now in circulation. Figures showed last week, so they revealed the circulation figures for that particular coin. So that is actually the second rarest 50p coin that's been made and in circulation, behind the Kew Gardens coin, the fabled Kew Gardens 50p that was made in 2009. Only 210,000 of those were minted. Mm-hmm. So they're incredibly rare, and they do sell for up to 100 quid online, which is an incredible amount of money when you think about it. But, you know, supply and demand, and, you know, people will pay that to get that rare coin. Now, the Isaac Newton 50p, I say it's the second rarest. There are other rare 50p's which were in the 2012 Olympics set, and some of those can be worth quite a bit of money. We've written extensively about this.
You say quite a bit of money. What are we talking about here?
They can go, again, for, you know, 30s, 40 quid, you know, depending on which one it is. You can look at the circulation figures, actually, on the Royal Mint website. They're really easy to find.
Is it worth holding on to them?
Look at the example of the Kew Gardens 50p coin, most definitely, yes, because about 2 years ago, they were selling more like 30, 40 quid.
Yeah.
I think what's happened, there's been a lot more written about coins and coin prices in the last couple of years, and a lot more people have become collectors. They've become quite enthusiastic about, you know, the Beatrice Potter 50p set, for example. There's a number of coins you can collect, and that's almost like an Easter egg hunt of work, you know, trying to find these coins and complete the set, and people love that sort of thing. You know, so it has become a lot more in the public psyche, and for that reason, that Kew Gardens coin has shot up in value, because it's becoming harder to get your hands on. And as more people know that coin is rare, if it ever does turn up in your change, the likelihood is someone's going to go, oh, I should probably keep hold of that. So most certainly can be worthwhile holding on to these. Now, the coin I'm going to talk about, this Isaac Newton 50p, there is going to be one with a 2018 date on it, but it's not a circulating coin. The only place you can get the 2018 coin is in Wales at the Royal Mint Experience. And if you cast your mind back to a year ago, Georgie, I actually visited for a story.
Every time I ever hear anyone talk about the Royal Mint, I just think of you.
Yeah, I don't actually know how to take that. But
you were so excited.
It was fascinating, Georgie. It was really good. It's a good day out.
Where is it?
Oh, it's in... Oh, don't make me pronounce it in Welsh. It's a really difficult...
That'll do.
Lusunt, I think it's called. It's near Cardiff. All right, anyway, cool. You'll find it. Just Google
I'll
it.
I'll go.
Google it. It's a really good thing. It's really good. You get to see the making the coins behind the scenes, and there's lots of fascinating history there and some really historic old coins where they were minted in the Tower of London, you know, many moons ago. It's a really interesting place to go. It's a little bit difficult to get to, but if you're in Wales and fancy going, it's worthwhile. Anyway, last year I struck a 12-sided £1 coin, I think you may remember, 2 months before they went into circulation, which was frightfully exciting. It was brilliant. They've replaced that now with Isaac Newton 50p coin with a 2018 date on it. So it's the only place you can get it is to strike it yourself at the experience. Now, this is, I should add, not going to be a circulating coin, which means there's not going to be that many of them because... I don't know how many people would go to the Royal Mint experience. I don't know what the figures are on the number of visitors it has. You can only strike one coin per person, and it's an extra fiver to strike a 50p coin. So people go, hold on a minute, this is a 50p coin and I'm paying £5 for it. But they called it a brilliant uncirculating coin. So it's of a good standard, and it's a good little keepsake anyway. So I'd written about that, and I thought, well, I wonder if anyone has been putting them on online, you know, just out of interest. Yeah. I found a couple that had been on there, and they were selling, they had bids on, so it wasn't like they just listed it for an obscene amount of money. I don't write like that. If someone gets a coin and I put it up on eBay for £5,000, that coin is not worth £5,000. Someone's just gone on there and said it. It's only worth what someone's willing to pay for it, is what I'm trying to get at. And there was a number that had, you know, dozens of bids on, and the couple I found were going for up to £80. So if you think about it, the Royal Mint experience to get in is £13 for a ticket, and it's £5 to mint the coin, so that's £18. If you can sell it for 60, 80 quid on eBay...
You've got your money back, right?
You've got your money back. Could be an inexpensive family day out.
Where you come from, yeah.
Yeah, so I think it's a really good little coin story, that. And it's quite fun striking your own coin there.
And you've still got the glow, the rush, the enthusiasm. Rachel, have you ever been on a work trip that's made you feel just like Lee over there in the corner?
I just can't compete. I mean, I did go once to Milton Keynes to...
Whoa!
Yes, I did. to the witch testing secret laboratories. That was quite good. But I didn't end up with a shiny 50p at the end of it.
That's incredible. I'm trying to think where I've been.
Georgie, you're just speechless.
Honestly, I am. Thank you very much, Rachel. Thank you very much, Lee. You can stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news throughout 2018. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. And if you like our podcast or you want to suggest any trips for Lee or Rachel, why not rate us on iTunes and tell your friends and family and join in the conversation.
This is Money, brought to you in partnership with NS&I Premium Bonds, making saving that little bit more exciting.